This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. It's your host, Tim Link, and I'm so excited you're joining us today. We've got a great show. We're going to be talking to author Nick Greenberg about his book, Buried Treasure. So we're going to learn the ins and outs of that book and find out who did what to who and all that good stuff. And, of course, there's always a dog involved, so have to have an animal involved. And then we'll chat with Nick a little bit about writing styles, and throw in a little bit about music as a little teaser. So everybody hang tight. We'll come back right after this commercial break. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Hey, guys. Have you ever had some reduced energy or had some mental clarity issues? We can find out some ways to help you out. You can go to yourtscore.com to take a simple test. Find out if your T-score is a little bit on the low side. That's at yourtscore.com. That's Y-O-U-R, the letter T, S-C-O-R-E.com. You'll be glad you did. Sponsored by Bolt Health at bolthealth.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Joining me now is Nick Greenberg, author, writer, extraordinaire, and music composer. There's another little teaser. We'll go into that a little more detail. Nick, welcome to the show.
Excited to be here.
Yeah, we're super excited to be here. Love the book. We're talking about Buried Treasure. Will Danny choose to fight for his, Epicurean muse? What is that word? You're using two big words for me here. So I don't want to give away the characters. Tell us a little bit about the book, Buried Treasure.
So it's set in Cincinnati, and Danny, our hero, if you will, is a struggling musician, and he's been on the road for a while, and he's kind of moved back to town and not gigging as much, doing a lot of recording, home recording, but he feels like something's lacking in his musical career and his life. But he did this, to keep his relationship healthy. Being on the road for months at a time is not always a plus for a good relationship. So he happens to be out in the woods behind his house one day with his golden retriever named Apollo. And nice. Apollo happens to dig up this very strange looking thing in the woods. And what he digs up ends up kind of changing Danny's life, maybe even providing a muse for his artistic endeavors. I don't know how, but should I reveal what this thing is?
Oh, you can reveal as much or as little as you want.
So what the golden retriever Apollo digs up is a truffle, not the chocolate kind, but the fungus kind. And turns out that this is a very high quality one. It has Italian and French roots and shouldn't be growing in Ohio. And when word gets out about this truffle kind of taking Cincinnati by storm, centuries old truffle fraternities are not happy about it.
Yes, because you're ruining the name of the truffle. It should be in Italy or France or some romantic place instead of, which I think is pretty romantic place, Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yeah.
Well, I love the fact that twist and turn of it, because before you started on the show, everybody knows I'm a Midwestern boy by heart, but living in Atlanta for a number of years. And so we started talking about my Cincinnati Reds and all the wonderful things in Cincinnati. And it just had to chuckle when I saw the book come across and I'm reading, okay, we've got Ohio truffles and known for its chili and, its beer and flying pigs and all the things from when I was growing up there. I don't ever remember even knowing what a truffle was, let alone finding one in Ohio or anywhere in the Midwest.
I mean, to that point, they don't grow here because the soil conditions don't tend to be ideal for that. But somehow all the planets come into alignment to make this happen. And also, this is fiction, so
we could do what we want to with it, which is fantastic. And I love how the dog saved the day and turned Danny's life around. So the book itself, tell us a little bit more about the characters, the struggles, and how you maybe did you pull from your own life to a degree, or was it some things that just popped in your head one day?
I would say it's a combination of everything you just said. I'm not a starving musician. Maybe I was back in the day, but I'm plenty busy. And some of the things that Danny comes across are things that I can relate to. I do a fair bit of home recording, working on a record right now with my son, who's out in LA. We're trading tracks, you know,
nice.
Over the thousands of miles. But so that's kind of what Danny's doing. And I do experience how that's different than being out there on stage performing. So, you know, for me, that was the perfect character to start with. And then dogs, I've always had dogs. I have a 10-year-old golden rescue, and it has to be a dog in the story. And I was warned by my writer friends, if anything happens to the dog, they will never speak to me again. So I can tell you that.
Yeah, that's it. You can't, if you're going to put a dog in there, it's like kids, you know, they'll take over the show and they'll take over the book, and but you can't kill them off. That's for dang sure. It's no old yellers around here for sure. And I've always teased because I always thought that if you put a dog on the cover of the book, which you have a lovely one doing his work, you're going to be successful. It doesn't even have to be a dog book. Just put a dog on there. You've got, you know, most of your audience taken care of. So it's good job on that. So the book itself, tell us a little bit about how you decided, okay, I'm going to write a book about this, because obviously your background is in music, you're a bassist, you're a composer, you write music, you've performed at Carnegie Hall, you've done all this wonderful things that you continue to do today. What made you decide to get sort of into writing and putting together this book, Buried Treasure?
It's kind of a path that I never chose. It just sort of happened. When my son was younger, in the summer, I would make lunch and carry it out to the back porch, and we would sit down at the table. And the first thing he would say to me every single day is, what happened next? And what he was referring to is this story that I just started making up with animals that can talk and shenanigans. And somehow it took a life of its own, even though oftentimes I was just super sleepy from a late gig the night before. I had to tell him what happened next. And I would say after the end of the summer of doing that, I kind of thought maybe I'd write a children's book based on these characters. And then somehow it didn't come out. It turned up to be a grown-up book about fungus. So I don't know how that happened, but I think I was reading some things about truffles, and I just, there's so much intrigue surrounding them, and the flavor is so sultry, and there's just, the more I looked into doing some research on it, including dogs versus pigs, I was just fascinated by it. I kind of had to combine the two, music and truffles.
That's nice. That's nice. Well, I love that story. I love that story because, you know, nowadays, you know, if you're a parent, you first of all try to take away the gadgets, the gaming, the, you know, the online stuff to have some one-on-one time. And then trying to put together a story that you've got to constantly, sounds like for many, many days, months, and years, you had to create more and more off the top of your head. And I love that pack. I'm sure that's stuck with your son his whole life so far.
It's still, when somebody says to me, even in a different context, what happened next, it takes me back to that.
Nice. Nice. I love that. I love that. And, you know, the truffle part of it, you know, I've seen shows on it. I've seen, dogs, and it's better known as pigs, going out and finding them. And it's one of those, they call it a delicacy, you know, it's, and it's very expensive. If you find one or more, you're in the money. It always fascinated me, though, in the fact that this is one of those things that if you dug it up, why in the world would anybody attempt to eat it? You know, you find some of these great delicacies, but, you know, at first it's like, you know, I'm not going to eat it. You'll get Mikey to eat it. You know, it's like, who would do this? But yet it's a very valuable commodity, and it is actually pretty awesome.
To that point, they're very ugly. I mean, why would humans hundreds of years ago choose to do that? That I don't have the answer to that.
Don't have it, but maybe in the next book we'll have a little bit more in depth on the truffle and how dogs became the truffle's worst enemy because they dug them up. That would be it. Well, everybody hang tight. We'll come back right after this commercial break. We'll talk a little bit more with Nick Greenberg about the book Buried Treasure, and then delve even more into writing styles, and whether we're talking about music or we're talking about writing a fictional book. So everybody hang tight. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Hey guys, you know, why is it important to know what your T score is? Well, you know, 40% of men over the age of 35 have low T, and men with untreated low T have higher incidence of heart attacks, and higher all-cause mortality. So to take a 10 simple questionnaire, you can go to yourtscore.com. It's Y-O-U-R, the letter T-S-C-O-R-E, and find out what your T-score is and see if you need a little bit of help. This is sponsored by Bolt Health at bolthealth.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Continue our conversation with author Nick Greenberg and his book, Buried Treasure. So, Nick, when you put together this fictional book, you know, you're starting off with all these great stories you're telling your son, and you decide, okay, it's going to be a children's book, but then it turns into this whole totally different thing. First of all, when it was done, what was your feelings about it? Did you reflect back on the fact that how in the world did I come from this being a children's book to now something that is really powerful and fictional and in real detective type crime story?
Actually, I didn't question the metamorphosis from children's to grown-ups because it just happened so organically. My brain just sort of shifted to, and I would spend a lot of time driving in the car going to play gigs and lots of ideas sort of just percolating. And once it started, I didn't look back. And I mean, I guess I was more astounded that I actually finished it.
Well, it's always exciting when you do complete a project, no matter how long it takes. I mean, how long did it take you to write this from sort of idea to putting it out on the shelves?
I can't tell you how many drafts I made, 15, 20. And some of those were minor changes. And I didn't go to school for writing and literature. So, I mean, I've always been an avid reader, but I think every time I read it, and I still to this day do it, I can't not make edits to it. So at some point I realized I just had to get it out there. I wanted to get it published, get it out to the world. And I had to stop making these little changes. Took several years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's the key. You know, I find it personally hard. Some theorists, some editors will say that, hey, just get it out there on paper, we'll say, but, you know, in your computer.
Yeah.
And don't look at, don't make, change the typos, don't change the context, don't change anything about it. Then later we'll go about editing. But I find that extremely hard to do. How about you?
Yeah, no, 100%. A lot of times, I can't tell you how many days I spend 15 minutes with one sentence. And I should be doing what you said. Just put it down. You know what you're trying to say. Move forward. You're going to go back and revise it anyway. But I just can't help myself sometimes.
Yeah, it's a challenge. I've always found it a challenge. There are other writers that say, yeah, I follow that. Whether I'm writing, and I've had some authors I've interviewed, they actually still write out. They take a legal pad and they write out their comments and everything. And others graph it out, and they have a format, and they have it all structured before they even get started. And others will start typing away X number per day, and then maybe once a month or two, or maybe even just let their editor just say, you know, you fix it. You know, that's what you're getting paid to do. I think for myself, I have to fix it as I go along, and then usually let my wife, Kim, do the real editing work, because I realized what I fixed is nowhere near what it should be. So,
well, I do trust, you know, at some point I do give it to my editor and they will fix all my grammatical mistakes. And there are plenty. And that's what, like you said, that's what we're paying them for. But into what you just said a minute ago about how people write, Buried Treasure was totally written, and you probably heard this term, plotter versus pantser.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. So that was totally written as a pantser. And for your listeners, that's somebody who just doesn't have it outlined, doesn't know what's going to happen, has a general sense of what the story is or the principal characters. But every day you just kind of see where it takes you.
Right. Fly by your pants. That's me. I'm definitely a pantser. We'll say that.
I'm learning to be a plotter because with my second book that I'm working on, book one was supposed to be a standalone novel. And people kept telling me, my agent said, oh, no, you got to write a trilogy. And I would give it to my friends and they'd say, what happened next? And what I found was to do that, my agent told me, if we have a trilogy, it's easier to sell to a publisher. But she wanted a thorough chapter outline for two books I hadn't written yet. So I became a plotter.
There you go. There you go. Always got to do that. And the trilogies are always great. I mean, you develop a fan base. This is my opinion. You develop a fan base. They get used to your writing style. They fall in love with what you do. They want to know what's next. They want to know what happens to the characters in the first book to go to the second book. I've always found that the challenge is you got to make sure you remember what that first book was all about. You know, you can't kill off the dog, like we said. So we know that's rule number one. But yeah, you've got to remember that they fall in love with not only the story that you're telling, but also the key characters within the book. And they want to know what's going on in their lives as well. So not giving you advice, because you definitely know how to do it. But it's something I've learned. It's a tricky thing as you go along.
It absolutely is. And what you just said really hit me when I started working on book two. I wanted to make some changes in book one, but it was already out. Sorry, when I was in book two, I was thinking, what if I had done this, but I can't change that. So that's carved in stone moving forward. So
we'll just have to have you back on the show so we know what book two is about. So we got you on the hook here, Nick. After putting the book out, so you're writing the book, you spend a couple of years getting it all done and dusted, you force yourself to quit editing it, it gets on the shelves. What do you hope to accomplish? Did you have a goal? Do you have something in your mind that if a fan pings you and says, hey, this did this for me, or I got this out of it, or I enjoyed it, would that be the kudos you were expecting? Or what would you hope that people would get out of the book?
Yeah, I would say every reader is going to get something a little bit different out of my writing, but hopefully they're coming to my books knowing they're going to be very foodie-centric. There's going to be music in it. There may or may not be a dog. So if those are things that speak to you, hopefully you're going to find the story compelling enough. And that's, I feel like I'm just trying to tell a story that's inside of me. I don't know where they come from, but I just can't help myself. So I'm hoping that people go with me on this journey wherever it goes.
Nice, nice. So the stories are within you. So we're going to switch gears, because obviously you're a very talented musician and composer. And as I mentioned before, your career's taking you to Carnegie Hall, Kennedy Center, here, there, and everywhere, even to my hometown of Richmond, Indiana, playing for the symphony, which I sang for a couple of times. So may we cross paths many moons ago.
Probably.
How do you go about doing switching gears from one to the other? And then how does one parlay to the other? Has your ability to compose and write, is it at the same level as writing fiction? Do you pull from your music writing and the skill set you have there to form your book? How does that work?
I would say composing-wise, it's very similar to writing. And also, like my writing, my composing is very by the seat of my pants, pantser. Like I just start, I find a note and I see what the next note is that I like. And then I've got 32 bars or 18, whatever the number of bars for the song. And then I start harmonizing it and the chords come kind of like the book filling out the story chapter by chapter. I feel like the harmony does that. And then I go back and edit it and change it. And like, I don't like that chord or that note doesn't work. So I'm changing either the melody or the chord so they fit together. But again, I'm trying to tell a story or convey an emotion that the song, you know, and I'm writing, most of my songs do have lyrics too. So it's the same thing. What do I want to get across?
Nice. I like that. I like that. So you can parlay both your experience as in writing music as well as writing books. Is one harder than the other?
Ha! They're equally as hard, definitely.
Yes.
I guess every day, like some days you sit down to write and just the muse is not there, but you know, you just got to move it forward. And maybe what you write today, you're not going to keep, but it is propelling the story to whatever the next major event is that you need to happen. So sometimes it's just doing the work.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. We were speaking offline a little bit for those that listen to the show for the many, many years. I did originally go to school as a vocal performance major. I spent a couple years doing that and got a minor in vocal performance and then got a business degree because I realized I wasn't nearly as talented as most of those kids out there. But I do reflect back to the writing of the notes and the bars and the things we had to do, the songs we had to write, the brutality of 7:35 days a week going to music theory class. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I feel that.
Oh, painful, even to this day, many moons ago. But I think it, I always reflect back to the music does have a rhythm and words and how, what the message is you're trying to get across. So I can definitely feel what you're saying and what you're writing in the book, that the message is getting across. You're putting in the right mix in there, the right characters, the right flow, and the things that will, by the time you're done with it all, both the song and the book, you feel good about what you've accomplished. And that translates, I know, to your audience as well.
Absolutely. There's a sense of satisfaction of getting it out there in the world. And I don't know that it's an ego thing. It's just a kind of, as what I said before, sharing part of you. And people like it or they don't like it. But the thrill to get it done and to, like I said, open it up to whoever wants to listen to it is, there's nothing quite like it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I tell people all the time when they're thinking about, you know, writing a book or a story or short stories, whatever it may be, whatever your genre or whatever you want to accomplish, once you publish it, it's there for life.
For good or bad.
For good or bad. It's out there. And it's far more than just, the pros and cons of social media, streaming, these type of things. You know, there's a lot of negativity behind it, but there's a lot of positivity behind it because it's always there. And with a book, once it's out there, it's in the Library of Congress. So unless they burn that sucker down and destroy all records, your book's going to be out there for good or bad. So, just write it and get it out there, and hopefully people will enjoy it or get something out of it. And I think that's
absolutely
the key.
Yeah.
Well, everybody go out and pick up a copy of the book. It's Buried Treasure by Nick Greenberg. It's a wonderful story. Great dogs, great truffles, great stories about it. And Nick, great job with the book. I thoroughly enjoyed reading it. And thank you for reminiscing with me about music and the Midwest.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we're coming to the end of the show today. I want to thank everyone for listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. I want to thank the producers and sponsors for making this show possible. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for the show, or people you want to hear from most, drop us a line. You can go to PetLifeRadio.com, and we'll be glad to answer your questions, entertain your comments, and bring on the people you want to hear from most. And while you're there, check out all the wonderful shows and hosts. It's a cornucopia of barking truffle fun. That's on PetLifeRadio.com. So until next time, write a great story about the animals in your life, and who knows, you may be the next guest on Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have a good day.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Hey guys, once again, if you want to find out what your T-score is, to find out why you're feeling a little bit sluggish, you can go to yourtscore.com, take a little 10-question questionnaire, and get some answers back to see if there's some ways that you can get your T levels up. That's at yourtscore.com. That's Y-O-U-R, the letter T, S-C-O-R-E.com. Sponsored by Bolt Health at bolthealth.com.